So what we're going to do is tell them things about Vice President Harris that we think they will find comforting, that we think they will find make it easier for them to sort of, you know, cross the aisle and cast that vote.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week, another wild week in politics. I mean, we knew that this was going to be a busy time. It's a busy year, obviously, because it's a presidential election year. I don't think any of us was prepared for all the zigs and the zags. And who knows how many of them are still left to come before we get to Election Day, Whiteley.
Yeah, we think about what's happened in the immediate term here with, you know, the attempted assassination, with Biden dropping out, with Harris picking up the ticket. But think about the last cycle or two that we've gone through. This has been stuff that we've never dealt with Trump, you know, making statements and you know, wanting to go meet Viktor Orban immediately after Orban met with Putin, Trump making statements about being a dictator on day one. This is truly historic. And who knows what's going to happen over the next 90 days or so? That's the most bizarre thing about that. I think we're all going on into this with, you know, with blinders on.
And with election fatigue before we ever get there. You know, I tend to think about this just being a journalist. I wonder a lot of times, you know, things are big when you're seeing them in real time. But a lot of times I think about what of any of this would make it into the history books someday? And, you know, a lot of it can, you know, fall out of, you know, it's sort of fodder when you start thinking of it over the long arc. But with this particular election season, I have been thinking like, maybe they're going to have like a separate little workbook that goes with the textbook that, because there's so much that is going to be germane to put into a history book just from this one cycle.
And you know, I've often thought about I'm not quite as old as you, but I've often thought about you know, what it was like in the 1960s with political assassinations, with the civil rights movement, with the civil rights legislation, the voting rights legislation. I mean, you talk about political upheaval. That was Vietnam War. Think about all the stuff that was happening in the 60s. I'm like, man, that must have been crazy to live through. And I've always thought about that as someone who's interested in politics. And now I'm thinking, what hell are we living through that right now?
I think this is plenty crazy to be living through, number one, to your point, and to your other point, you are correct. You are not quite as old as me. You are older than me.
You know what? No, it's odd. We just discovered this yesterday. I left my wallet.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And one of the floor directors brought it upstairs to the newsroom and gave it to me. And Wheeler and I discovered that we have the same wallet as well.
Yeah, because you're standing there talking to me at my desk and they bring this lost wallet up to you, which first of all, that's just like me too. I leave that thing everywhere I go. And they brought up this wallet to you and I look like it. I did a double take because I thought, is that my wallet? And how is it that we both have these? It's the exact same brand wallet, same color
from Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're totally different people and we hate each other. Like, how do we still keep doing the same things?
It's super bizarre. But, you know, considering all that, considering how
really
much
we hate each other, you hate me, but we don't hate each other.
So let's get straight to the topic at hand here.
It's too late for that. We've already been talking for like 10 minutes.
I know.
Well, I picked this one out. It was in the fridge. And I figured this fits because we're talking about a very spicy election year that we're having this time around. Four Corners Brewing Company. This is their spicy chila. It's got that lime in it. And
is that
I think it's got maybe a little bit of jalapeno. Oh, yeah. Lime jalapeno lager.
Huh. Interesting. Did Mrs. Wheeler buy that and stash it in the back of the fridge?
I think I bought this one. Wow. It's been in there a little while.
I know. I have the same thing, man. I looked in there. I'm like, man, what do I have in here?
Oh, you know what? No, I stole this one from the station. We did a podcast at the station a little while ago, and we had a bunch of guests. And so I went and bought like a million six packs. You know, of course, on the Y'allitics expense account. And, you know, we ended up with some spicy ones left over. I just remembered that after I took a taste of this and I just, you know, stuffed them into my bag. But, you know, I'm using them for work here.
And I'm on my IPA kick for a little bit here. I'm not a huge IPA fan.
I don't get this.
Starshine. This is from Martin House Brewing Company over in Fort Worth. I don't know enough about IPAs. I should. They have obviously this unique taste. But I thought IPAs had a higher per alcohol volume. This is a 5%.
Oh, you need to get a stout, my friend.
This is like watered down, I would think. But let's see what it tastes like.
It's just your speed. I'm surprised you're drinking all these IPAs, just taste-wise.
It's a man's beer. It's a man's beer, Wheeler.
Oh, I'm not a man then in that case.
Not a little fruity beer like yours. You saw the Three Amigos, right?
This does have lime. And then this does have lime in it, so it's got the fruit, but it's also got the jalapeno kick. So today we're talking about the July surprise.
Which
and
one?
Not the July surprise that you're thinking of. Yeah. So the big surprise, of course, was on the 21st of July when President Biden decided to step aside after that calamitous debate performance that he had and calls for him to get out of the race. He did step aside on July 21st and then quickly endorsed Vice President Harris in her campaign now for the White House. 2 days after that, I should say right away after that, this group of Nikki Haley voters, they voted for Republican presidential candidate Nikki Haley in the primaries, and they were all about her. There were some of them who, or maybe a fair number of them who were never Trumpers and wanted to put their weight behind somebody else in the primaries, hoping to take him out in the primaries. At any rate, right away, they pushed this big group of Nikki Haley voters, former Nikki Haley voters, put their weight behind Vice President Harris. So they became a group known as Haley Voters for Harris. And that's what they called themselves. Well, 2 days after Harris gets into the race, a law firm representing Nikki Haley reaches out with a July surprise and tells this group, hey, you need to take the name Nikki out of your group. No images, no likeness, no nothing. We think you're misrepresenting, you're representing her. And they're saying, well, no, we're not doing that. So 2 days after that cease and desist letter, they respond to that letter and say, no, we're going to neither cease nor desist. This is First Amendment speech. We're not representing her. Everybody knows that we're Haley voters, but we just happen to be for Harris now. But it just underscores, I think this is a nice little microcosm of this election year. It's created some odd bedfellows. We've had, people who maybe have never, gotten involved in politics before involved. We've got people who used to be involved in one area in politics or with one party going over to another party. It is an interesting time of churn.
And I'm sure you've talked to quite a few Texans about this as well, but there are a number of Texas Republicans who would consider themselves George W. Bush Republicans, Reagan Republicans, who just aren't on board the Trump train, who have never voted Democrat, who have conservative values, but they don't want to vote for Trump in 2024 in November here. So where do those people go? What actually happens? And I've been so curious about this. What actually happens in the voting booth when these Republicans walk in? I'm curious what happens when a lot of Republican elected officials walk in. Who do they actually vote for in the voting booth? Now, getting back to the Harris or Haley Voters for Harris here, I've seen the headlines. You've seen the headlines. Maybe you saw them scrolling through your feed as well. A few things struck me about this. They've been around for a minute. They organized in 2023, so it's not a new thing. It's not something that Harris has put them up to, or Democrats or Biden have put them up to. They're legit Haley voters. But just what are their numbers? How big are they? And what states? Because when I started looking them up, they don't have a lot of money. They haven't been reporting a lot of money. And, God knows in politics, you got to have money to get your message out there. Now, this group, the Haley Voters for Harris, has done a tremendous job getting earned media. They're getting people like us to talk about them. And that's priceless because they've been all over the country. But how much of an impact can they make without heavy sums behind them? That's what I'm curious to find out today.
And what do they do with these Haley voters who are disenchanted with Donald Trump, but live in a state like Texas. You know, so much of the focus goes elsewhere, you know, because we're not, you know, a quote unquote battleground state. What do they tell those voters to do here in Texas, or how can they use, you know, those voters if they wanted to help out?
So the director for Haley Voters for Harris is a guy named Craig Snyder, and Craig Snyder is no stranger to politics. He's been a Republican, though, for decades. He worked for former Senator Arlen Specter, Republican from Pennsylvania. He has a political consulting firm that he ran for a number of years. He's well-versed in all things happening, and he's been the guy that's been quoted constantly in all these stories about Nikki Haley trying to get people to stop using her name. So we reached out to him. We found him in Pennsylvania. That's where he lives. Pennsylvania, of course, is a battleground state. So he got a call from two Texans the other day. Here's what he said.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. For another smart conversation on Eolitics.
Craig, welcome to the program here. You know, you guys have made a lot of news with Nikki Haley's attorney sending you that cease and desist letter saying to take her name off this. You responded by saying, we're neither going to cease nor desist to it. Do you expect this is going to go to court?
Well, that's really in the hands of the other side, and I don't like to engage in speculation. It certainly shouldn't go to court. There's no meritorious claim here. We are not in any way, never have, never will misrepresent Governor Haley's position, which is known to anybody who, you know, is paying attention to politics. She's endorsed President Trump strongly, emphatically. And, you know, we consider that to be her right to do so. But what our group represents is people who voted for Nikki Haley. They can call themselves Nikki Haley voters because they are. That includes me. I'm a registered Republican in Pennsylvania who voted for Nikki Haley in the Pennsylvania primary. So I am a Haley voter. And we are telling people that this particular group of Nikki Haley voters supports the vice president. Which we clearly have a right to do. So I don't know whether it will go to court, but certainly if it does, it won't stay there very long.
Yeah, and the letter that they sent you all had a lot of bark in it. We don't know how much bite it's got in it, but you know, it in part they threatened that they would take you and report you to the Federal Election Commission and the FBI. To your knowledge, has any such report been made to any agency at this point?
Not to our knowledge, no.
I want to ask you, because you all, Nikki Haley dropped out right after Super Tuesday. So right after that, we had the vote here in Texas, and she got quite a few votes here in Texas. The next day, she dropped out of the race. She didn't see any path forward. And immediately, you all went a different direction and said, okay, well, you know, now that this candidate is out of the race, this is the one we wanted. You all turned your attention and started supporting President Biden for his reelection effort. And that went for some months. And then, of course, as we all know, in July, President Biden decided to step aside. He endorsed Vice President Harris, and she began her run. And immediately you all changed to Vice President Harris instead. You didn't get any pushback from the Haley campaign while you were in that period where you were for months when you were supporting President Biden in his reelection bid. What does it say to you that immediately when you all put your support behind Vice President Harris, you heard from Nikki Haley's folks?
Well, again, I don't like to speculate on other people's thought processes and motives. That's really a question that only they can answer. I would say that, you know, I mean, you're factually accurate in the way you've laid out the timeline. Our organization was called Haley Voters for Biden for a, you know, substantial period of time. And no objection was raised to it. So people can draw their own conclusions, I suppose. If one were to speculate, one might say that this came pretty quickly after the Republican convention, pretty quickly after Haley had formally endorsed Trump. She had not done that in that intermediate period. So that was certainly one change in the situation. And then the other change, obviously the biggest one, was the President Biden deciding to bow out. And the candidate becoming the vice president. So, you know, I'll leave it to others to sort of read the tea leaves as to what was in Ambassador Haley's mind and the folks around her. For us, we're focused on sort of, you know, convening the people who are center right Republicans who do not like Donald Trump being the standard bearer of the party, who do not like the values of Trumpism, and who are looking for a better alternative in this coming November.
Greg, how many of those do you think there are out there?
Well, about 4.5 million people voted for Nikki Haley overall in the process. At least a million of those are in battleground states who voted for her after she was no longer a candidate. And when you stop to think about that, it's a pretty big protest vote. Again, I'm one of these voters. You know that there's no real contest going on. You're not voting for an active campaign. But nonetheless, you go to the polls and you cast the vote. Why would you do that? You do it because you want to send a message to the party that Donald Trump shouldn't be what the Republican Party stands for, and shouldn't be allowed to be the standard bearer of the Republican Party. So I think that among that group of voters who voted for her in swing states after she was no longer a candidate, it is a sizable number of people, way more than the amount by which those states are likely to be determined in the election. Again, I'll refer to my home state of Pennsylvania. Hillary Clinton lost this state by 40,000 votes in 2016. President Biden won the state by 80,000 votes. Well, in our primary in April, Nikki Haley got 160,000 votes, substantially more than the deciding number in the last two election cycles. So these folks have the potential, very likely, have the power to determine where Pennsylvania's Electoral College votes go.
Mm-hmm. Because the point that you're making there is, you know, again, she dropped out, what was it, March 6th. We kept expecting some of these vote tallies to trail off in the primaries that followed that, thinking that, well, you know, some of these are probably people who early voted and we're just still seeing some artifacts of that. But there we were months later, even into, you know, May, still seeing her, you know, outperforming what people thought she would up in the 20% range or so. And so your estimation is that a lot of these people may be reachable. They may be turnable. My question is, what do you say to them? What do you do? How do you get the message out to them to say, hey, come aboard over here and here's why?
Right. Well, that's our whole mission, of course. So we are spending this month, the new month just begun, really doing a really intense program of research on the various messages that we think might be effective. And obviously those messages had to be retooled in as everything in this campaign has, with President Biden stepping aside. So we're working on that. And we believe that we're going to have really a defined program of what I would call public education more than anything else, that we will begin to roll out on a mass communication scale in the battleground states as soon as the Democratic convention has completed. I'm obviously not going to get into the very specifics of messaging, but I will say in general terms that what we believe is that these voters, these center-right voters, these are anti-Trump voters, but they're not comfortable with the idea of voting Democrat. Many of them may never have voted for a Democrat before for president in their lives. So how do you make that more comfortable? I don't think it, in our case, it will not be sort of beating on the various complaints and deficits about Donald Trump, because there are plenty of other groups doing that. And the Democratic campaign itself will be doing that. And I think our voters already have made that decision that they don't like Trump. So what we're going to do is tell them things about Vice President Harris that we think they will find comforting, that we think they will find make it easier for them to sort of, you know, cross the aisle and cast that vote. And there are many of those things that are possible. Look, this administration, if you get your information from right wing media, You would believe that this administration, the Biden-Harris administration, has been, you know, like some sort of old Soviet communism. And that's just nonsense. Okay. This administration has done many things that are squarely in the center of American politics, that are squarely moderate. This administration, including the vice president, you know, are not about defunding the police. They've been about refunding and increasing funding for police. They are not about destroying the fossil fuel industry. We have the highest oil production in American history right now. We have more drilling that's been done under President Biden and Vice President Harris than was done under Donald Trump. We have, you know, a sort of normally conservative foreign policy when it comes to supporting our allies and standing up to tyrants in the world like Vladimir Putin. There's just scores of issues, really, on which this administration has been in the center, and where Vice President Harris has been at the center of that centrist policymaking. So we're going to make sure that people know that, because I don't think they do. I think a lot of our voters have only heard sort of a caricature of the vice president as some kind of extreme left winger. And related to that is making sure that our voters know that there really is an extreme left wing in our country. There really is an extreme left wing in the Democratic Party. And those folks do not like Kamala Harris. They have shown up at her rallies to protest her. They have called her all sorts of names, most famously Cop Mala, because of her very tough on crime record as a prosecutor. Once our voters know those things, I think they'll come this way.
Hey, Craig, is Pivot PAC the political action committee behind you guys? Is that the group?
It is.
Just looking up, you know, the FEC records, the Federal Election Commission records, you guys raised about $400,000, I believe, this year. You spent $330,000 of it. You have, what, 30, 40, 50,000 left in the bank account. How do you create a campaign with 90 plus days left in the before Election Day if you don't have the cash?
Well, there's a lag time, as you know, between these filings, or there can be a lag time between donations and filings. As of today, we are a solid mid six figures bank account. And as of Labor Day, we expect to be a major seven figure enterprise. We have both small dollar donors and large donors that are pledged, and we're going to be a substantial force financially as well.
Craig, who are some of those large dollar donors? Are these Republicans who've donated to Republican candidates in the past?
I'm going to let our FEC filings speak for themselves. We're going to disclose our donors to the extent required by law and not beyond it.
And did you all see an uptick after the announcement was made, after President Biden decided to step aside and endorsed Vice President Harris, and then you all got behind her? Did you see any change as far as the money coming in right away?
We did instantaneously. We have not been soliciting small dollar donations. We're open to them. We'd love to have them, but we've not been soliciting them. but immediately after, that we made the change to support Vice President Harris, we saw a substantial number of low dollar donors make contributions. From at last count 37 states. And as I say, these are completely spontaneous donations. And many of those individuals not only chipped in a few bucks, but they wrote us messages. They told us why they were doing it. And there were a lot of folks that were that said that they had voted for Nikki Haley, that they thought she was the better Republican candidate. They wished she was the Republican candidate at the time they voted for her. But that they're now very disappointed both in her endorsement of President Trump, but also in this, you know, sort of silly cease and desist attack on us and our free speech rights. Some folks in the media call this the Streisand effect, where you try to stop a story, and by stopping a story, you make it bigger. And I think that's what happened in our case.
We've seen these recent mega Zooms to win with Black women. We saw one with white women for Harris, and we saw one with white dudes for Harris. They call themselves recently. They raised millions of dollars in these enormous Zoom calls. I have to ask you, is there a plan or a thought of a Haley Voters for Harris mega Zoom fundraising call like that?
No, there's not. We're part of a, you know, we're part of an ecosystem, really, of what I would describe as pro-democracy and cross-partisan organizations that are working in this election. And everyone has a sort of a piece of the puzzle. When you put that puzzle pieces together, I think the picture you get is that the vice president wins the election and that the country is saved from Trump 2.0. But there will be different approaches by each of the different puzzle pieces. Our work is on direct voter communication to a targeted group of voters that we think is, you know, potentially decisive in this election. That's what we're going to focus on.
Greg, why is it necessary to use her name? Why not just use the PAC's official name, Pivot PAC?
Because again, we are describing who we are. We are people who are center right Republicans, and in some cases, Republican leaning independents, who really want the Republican Party to be saved and reformed. And unfortunately, the only way that can happen is for Donald Trump to be defeated. But fortunately for the country, there's a good alternative in Vice President Harris.
And you said pro-democracy also just a moment ago. Republicans said after the attempted assassination in Butler, Pennsylvania, language like that really needs to be toned down. What do you say to Republicans about that?
I think they're wrong. I think there's a lot of language that needs to be toned down in American political discourse today, a lot of it. But not that. That is, again, an accurate description of fact, in my opinion. Donald Trump has made a series of statements that are unlike anything ever made by any president or presidential candidate in the entire 250-year history of this country. He has talked about terminating the Constitution. He has talked about being a dictator on day one. He has told people that if they vote this time, they'll never have to vote again. I mean, I could go on. He's talked about running for another term, which would be prohibited by the Constitution. I could go on and on all day. Now, some people say these are jokes or they're exaggerations. They're not serious. You're entitled to your opinion if that's what you think. But there are lots of us who take those statements, anti-democratic, anti-constitutional statements, very seriously. And they're backed up by Project 2025, in which people very close to Trump, he's tried to distance himself from it politically. But the reality is that intimates of Donald Trump wrote Project 2025, and it calls for what many of us believe are undemocratic, quasi-dictatorial, authoritarian kinds of policies. I think it is the assassination attempt was, of course, tragic and evil. And there's no place for it, as so many people have said correctly, in American politics or American life. But it cannot produce a chilling effect on the very important discussion that we need to have in this election about whether or not Donald Trump's policy plans represent a threat to democracy.
Greg, we focus a lot on battleground states. You're going to be focusing a lot, obviously, on the battleground states. That's where the whole thing is. I am curious, though, you know, here we are in Texas. We don't get a lot of the attention as we get closer to Election Day because the outcome here is usually fairly predictable. But Nikki Haley did get 405,472 votes here on Super Tuesday when Texans went to the polls. I'm curious, you know, if there are, you know, people here in Texas who voted for Nikki Haley who have similar leanings to what you're talking about here. What are you telling those voters? I mean, I know that you're not going to be blasting out as much to those Nikki Haley voters in states like this, but how can they help you or how can they be a part of what you're doing here if they are so interested?
Yeah, that's a very good and important question. And as it's a little bit it's a little bit of an out-of-body experience for me who lives in Pennsylvania and is going to be subjected to like $1 billion of political advertising in the next 90 days. I don't know whether to envy or feel sad for the majority of Americans that are sort of left out of the process because of the Electoral College system. But having said that, those voters that you're talking about who are like-minded, who are in Texas, obviously they can send us a couple of bucks. It will help. Also, there might be some small portion of them who would be willing to travel to a battleground state, to knock on doors, to engage in other kinds of volunteer activities. Go on our website, sign up for our alerts, and if you are interested, we will try to find a way to engage you.
Craig, you were making your pitch a little while ago about, you know, why you think Vice President Harris is the right person to win the presidency. And you were talking about how you hear from other Nikki Haley voters and other Republican voters in general. I'm curious, have you had discussions with people in these past few months here where you feel like you walked away after having converted somebody? Was there someone who you were able to say, hey, you have this picture of, you know, the vice president, let me, you know, draw a different picture for you? And did you make headway? Are you seeing that on an individual basis at all?
Yes. We had actual empirical, you know, research that demonstrated that the techniques I was talking about before were effective on some voters when in the context of President Biden being at the top of the ticket. So we're still in the process of proving out, in a scientific way with respect to the vice president, because it's only been, you know, what, a little over a week. But having said that, I can tell you anecdotally, and I can tell you personally, that I've gone through this kind of analysis and these arguments, given people some facts they didn't know in the last week to 10 days, and seen the same effect. I've seen people say, wait a minute, you're telling me that the Democratic Socialists of America and the sort of extreme environmentalists and other, you know, kind of tentpole of the left wing establishment are anti-Harris? And I say, yes, here, you know, point at the statements, point at the quotes. And they say, all right, well, then, you know, maybe she's not what I thought she was. So as I said earlier, we view ourselves in a lot of ways as an educational organization. We're going to give people facts and let them make up their own mind because it's information they may not get from any other source.
Craig, I was talking to somebody the other day who would probably identify similar to you as a Haley supporter in the past and not really a Trump supporter. But this person said, listen, it's not even worth me going to vote in Texas here because this state's going to go to Trump. And that's going to happen in a lot of states across the country. What would you say to those folks who say, my vote's not even going to count because I already live in a Republican state?
In this case, I was sort of joking before, but now I'm speaking from the heart. I do feel that there are a lot of Americans who feel disenfranchised and sort of disempowered by the Electoral College system. But, you know, obviously we have to play by the rules as they are, and these are the rules. I would always urge Americans to go vote, to go use their franchise, even if they know intellectually they will not be able to, you know, get the outcome they want. People fought and died for this right to vote over centuries. It's a precious thing that many, 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 many millions, hundreds of millions, billions, in fact, of humans don't have. I think we should respect it, we should honor it, and go out and vote. There are times when you look at a choice and you say, this is just an unacceptable choice, and I will skip that line on the ballot, and I'll vote for other offices, because of course every office up and down the ballot is important and affects our lives. So I'd urge a lot of people sort of only vote in presidential years. A lot of people only vote in the presidential race, and that's a mistake. Elected officials up and down the ballot have very important roles in shaping the way our economy and our society works, and people ought to go vote in those races.
Yeah, we did see that actually in a lot of cases on ballots here in Texas the last time around, that people skipped that race at the very top of the ballot and actually then went along and filled in the other races on the ballot that they did care about. Craig, you know, I was looking at your history. You've run for office before as a GOP candidate. You worked for Republican Senator Arlen Specter back in the day, had some high positions in his office. You were also an advisor to the presidential campaign of late Republican Senator Bob Dole. How weird is this for you to be in a situation now where you are fully behind a Democrat for president? These are odd times we're in.
They are odd times. It's still weird after 8 years, but it's less weird than it was in 2016. I had the occasion to meet Donald Trump on a number of occasions. Relatively early on in my career as a political consultant, back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Most people don't remember this, but Donald Trump very briefly ran for president of the United States in the year 2000 cycle in Ross Perot's Reform Party, and ultimately withdrew from that race. But I came to the conclusion all those years ago that this was not a person that I believed was fit by temperament or character to hold the highest office in the world. And so when he came down that escalator in 2015 and became a candidate in the 2016 presidential cycle, I knew then that from my point of view, I needed to oppose him. And really, from my point of view, try to save the Republican Party that I had loved and believed in for a long time before then. So far, that effort by me and by others has not been successful. Donald Trump is clearly the leader, the power in the Republican Party, what the Republican Party has become. So, you know, you're left with a choice. You can stay with the institution because you have some institutional connection to it in the past, friends and colleagues and business ties, or you can do what you think is right as a matter of principle. And I've tried to follow my heart and do that.
Hey, Craig, last question I have here. No one could have predicted what's played out in the last month or so with Biden dropping out, the attempted assassination, the momentum that Trump had, now the momentum that Kamala Harris has. How do you see this playing out, though? You're there in Pennsylvania, huge battleground state. There's, you know, we called it Arizona and the industrials, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, of course, Arizona, even Nevada. What are you expecting to see over the next 3 months?
I will tell you that I have absolutely smashed my crystal ball with a big hammer. We are living through historic events in the last a couple of months. They've been coming at us fast and furious. We had the first time that a presidential candidate and a former president got convicted of crimes. We had historically poor performance of President Biden in the debate. We had the withdrawal of President Biden, the sort of ascension of Kamala Harris. This has been a series of unexpected events. So I don't know what the next 100 days are going to hold, and I don't know that anybody does. By the way, the world. You know, the world is focused on our elections, but it's not controlled by our elections. The world is going on, and the situation in the Middle East gets more and more dangerous almost by the day. So there could be external events, not just domestic events, but international events that really shake up this race as well. Obviously, we had the assassination attempt again, historic and terrible. So I think if you're a political professional like me, you kind of run your race like a racehorse with blinders. You try not to look at what's going on in the lanes around you. You run your own best race you can, as fast as you can, as hard as you can. You can't control everything, but you try to do the best you can with what you got.
Craig, the Harris campaign has been reaching out to, you know, potential voters from the other side of the aisle. I'm curious, how much have you been able to coordinate with the Harris campaign, or how much do you expect to coordinate with the Harris campaign on what you're trying to do for them?
That's a clear zero, because we are a super PAC, and so we are prohibited by law from a coordination with the campaign. They learn about what we do through the media, through the press, and we learn about what they do through the press. But there's no direct contact.
Good point. Sorry about that. The other thing I wanted to ask you, just to finish up here, you believed in Nikki Haley at one point. You cast a vote for her. She, of course, you know, dropped out of the race. She endorsed the candidate that you just cannot stomach. And then, you know, you've been through this effort where you're supporting the Harris campaign, and you got the cease and desist letter from the Haley legal representatives there. And it was, you know, not the kindest letter, as these tend to not be. Would you ever support her again if she were to run again one day?
I am totally focused on the next 100 days. I think America has an absolutely critical choice to make, and that it's sort of a fork in the road moment for our country come November the 5th. So I'm just not going to speculate beyond that as to what happens. Would it be possible that I might support Ambassador Haley at some point? I suppose it's possible. She's done a lot of good work in her distinguished career of public service. And I take nothing away from her in that regard. I'm also, you know, personally close to Pennsylvania's governor, Josh Shapiro. He may well have a future in national politics. In fact, he may have a future in national politics any day now. We'll see. What I hope is that we can talk about elections in 2026, 2028, 2030 and beyond in normal terms, that we cannot talk about them as being critical to the defense of America's constitutional republic. But in order to get to that point where we're back to debating what marginal tax rates should be and how to deal with the deficit and what the best healthcare program is, to get back to that point, we first have to defeat Donald Trump. And that's what we're doing in the next 100 days.
Greg, thanks so much for the time. Great insight, and good luck to you guys.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Craig.
Hey, y'all. Want to see the Jasons Talk Politics? Download the WFAA Plus streaming app for your smart TV and watch the latest episode of Y'allitics each Wednesday night at 8:30.